Thank you for joining us again for another informative episode of Satellite Nation. Satellite Nation is a weekly call-in show geared towards the hobby side of all things television. Brought to you by Satellite Guys Radio. Now here are your hosts, Michael and Brian.
Good evening, Satellite Nation. It's Michael Graves, K4EST. Good evening.
And good evening, I'm Brian Gold, Titanium Satellite. Welcome to Satellite Nation. Tonight we're going to discuss the future of C-band and the threats to lose the frequencies for other technologies. Joining us will be Dave Wally Heights from GotC-band.com.
And get ready, so everybody wants to call into this live show tonight. It's going to be good here for the 28th of January 2015. And let's talk about this and or any other technology that you got on your mind. If you'd like to do that, the toll-free number is 1-877-FAT-GUYS. That's 877-728-4897. Or if you're an international caller, we're going to save us a little bit. Or if you're international or anything like that, call us at 347-327-9319.
Now, if you happen to miss a Satellite Nation show, you can always catch us and find us on a link on the Satellite Guys Radio Forum at www.satelliteguys.us. Now, remember to like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. And I think there's going to be something special for people who come on and chat with us on Facebook, isn't there?
That's right.
What might that be?
Might be a T-shirt or two.
Would that be a Satellite Nation T-shirt?
That's right. Yeah, we got some Satellite Nation T-shirts now available. So, if anybody wants to win one, go over to Facebook and like our page. And what we're going to do, actually, I think, do is go in there and because I don't want to leave out people to like the page. Go in there and make your comment on Facebook, on our Facebook page, that you would like to win a T-shirt. And I want to see where it shows you shared the link with somebody or shared it on your wall or something. Maybe get some more people who like the Satellite Nation. How does that sound?
That sounds great. So after the show, Michael, you'll go ahead and get a thing set up over on Facebook page that people can link and share. And if you link off of that posting, you'll win a T-shirt for Satellite Nation. So that's pretty cool. Head on over to facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. And also, people, if you're into Twitter, you can follow us also on Twitter at SatNatRadio. We want to hear your questions and comments and sign up for your free T-shirt.
That's right. And we also, like always, want to give a special thanks out to Scott at SatelliteGuys.us for the use of Satellite Guys Radio and supporting the show over there and keeping everything over there on the servers for all the archives. And Dave Wallace from .cband.com for making use of his IceCast audio server.
Definitely. That IceCast audio server helps us get up on Galaxy 19 and helps us get shared over to Satellite Guys Radio and over to Access America. And so that's the next people that we want to thank. We want to thank Access America, Ralph Black, for putting us on Galaxy 19. So catch his and Mike Cole's show right after our show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday evenings on Access America on Galaxy 19 KU or on the Access, also on Satellite Guys Radio as well. Also want to thank Michael and his store, nc-electronics.com. You know, it's these stores that help pay the bills and help us support Satellite Nation.
That's Let's not forget Titanium Satellite, too, Brian's store. Head on over there, titaniumsatellite.com. Always find stuff. And if you would like to buy a T-shirt and don't want to wait to win one, you can go to cafepress.com/Satellite Nation. And there's all kinds of things over there, coffee mugs and everything else, if you'd like to support the show.
That's very cool. So what is that website again that people can get T-shirts and mugs from?
CafePress.com. I started saying Cafe Express. It's CafePress.com. I guess, you know, like a press, printing press, and then /Satellite Nation.
Very cool. And you will have a link up on Facebook. So if you want to head over there and get yourself a T-shirt or get yourself a mug and help celebrate Satellite Nation, which you are, Satellite Nation, head on over and get that today. Now, coming up next, we have a new segment by Dave and some great information on that news this evening. And then after the news, Dave will be joining us. We're going to have a little roundtable about the news. So if you're listening this evening and you want to join us and talk about some of that news or just anything that's on your mind and talk about the future of C-band, go ahead and get ready to do a dial up now. And here's the number.
Phone lines are now open for Satellite Nation. Call us at 877-SAT-GUYS or 877-728-4897.
Woohoo! All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into the news.
Roll that news.
Hey, welcome to the news with Dave, a.k.a. Wally HTS on Satellite Guys. So last week we were talking about Elon Musk wanting to launch this microsatellite network that was going to have over 4,000 microsatellites. So it's come out just to confirm that Google and Fidelity Investments is both going to invest $1 billion in this company for a 10% stake. So the other company that's out there that wants to do this is now called OneWeb. Before it was OneWeb, it was called WorldVU. Now, before it was WorldVU, it was a SkyBridge. SkyBridge failed, and WorldVU got the assets of the company. And so the interesting thing about OneWeb that makes it a little bit different than the SpaceX one is that their funding is from Qualcomm and also Richard Branson of the Virgin Group. But what happened in January this month of 2015 is that WorldVU, now OneWeb, came out and announced that they had secured funding from those two companies. And just a few days later, then Elon Musk at SpaceX came out and announced that they had gotten funding from Google and Fidelity. So interesting there, because there's a lot of history in previous years of where WorldVU was working with Google at the same time Google was working with SpaceX. And some people had actually joined Google after Google had bought O3b Networks, but then left Google and went to WorldVU. And that's when they went in a different direction. And the one thing about OneWeb that I do want to point out that I find very unique is that they are the only company that has obtained a license from the ITU to operate Ku band that is not placed in the geosynchronous orbit. So they'll be able to, OneWeb that is, be able to put these satellites in, low Earth orbit. It will be interesting to see what they come up with, especially since they're backed by Qualcomm that has a lot of big patent portfolio that would probably help them out dramatically. This is still, taking shape to see what's going to happen, and hopefully there's two companies out there offering this low-orbit satellite to the remote regions of the earth to drive competition and drive down prices, in my view. So we'll stay on top of this and see what we got going on. Tomorrow, on Thursday, at 9:20 a.m., NASA is launching the SMAP satellite. And what is the SMAP? Well, so it's this cool-looking satellite. Actually, it is. That basically, there's several of them, but this is the next one in the launch. That's actually going to track like global soil moisture levels, I think for like the first couple of inches, and then you report back. And what's interesting about this satellite is that, so there's a satellite, and then there's a boom, and then off this boom comes a big reflector, and then off this reflector from the actual satellite, they're bouncing microwave signals between like 1.2 and 1.3 gigahertz to this reflector that then bounces down to Earth, and that's how they're getting the samples of the data from the moisture in the soil. And it's an interesting project. So that, I guess they're going to be able to look at how drought spread and things like that. But now, so I had to go looking to see what the frequency range was that they're shooting up the satellite, and it is in the S-band. And I didn't find the exact, but I bet it's probably around the 2.2 gigahertz range, if I had to guess. The speed is not really all that much. It's as much as like 64 kilobits per second. Hopefully I said that right. So that's like one B channel on an ISDN line. And if you think you might want to be able to receive this data, unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be possible because they're using four ground stations around the world, Norway, Alaska, Virginia, and Antarctica. So I guess maybe just three in, you know, this hemisphere and the one in Antarctica. But they're all, except the one in Antarctica is only 10 meters, but all the other ones are 11.3 meters. So maybe if you can afford a 11.3 meter satellite, you might be able to check out some of this data they're sending down. Again, that's check out space.com, and there's a button there that says watch live this Thursday, tomorrow at 9:20 a.m. Hey, this is Dave with the news, and we'll check you out next week.
All right. Joining us live now is Dave Wally Heights. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hey, how you guys doing? Thanks for inviting me.
Good. How are you, Dave?
Oh, definitely, Dave.
I'm
hey, just want to thank you for that excellent report. Boy, there's a lot of heavy data in there, so let's break it down. Microsats. Tell us about microsats. What is Elon Musk's vision for these microsats?
So he wants to launch 4,000 microsats into low orbital and basically provide internet around the world all the time at high speeds. What I haven't found on Elon Musk's vision is exactly what spectrum they're going to use.
So while OneWeb or WorldView has licenses to be able to do some of this technology, Elon is dreaming, but he has money behind his dreams.
Yeah, I believe so. But I could be wrong. I didn't see a definite answer of what spectrum they were going to use, but I'm sure to get $2 billion, they probably have something up their sleeve that they're not saying.
I sure would like to know what frequencies they're using. They're going to be using.
Yeah, Michael, how do you think this ties into what Syed is planning for his data around the world?
I think it's going to kind of go hand in hand with it. You'll be able to have, you know, everything right there all the time. And then if you can afford to pay for it and have, you know, this type of thing that Dave was talking about, you know, you can have the high speed and, you know, real time, whatever. But you have all the satellites there that might be able to, you know, use for stuff like the outer net.
Right, yeah. Outer net definitely – you know, it seems to be something out there. One thing that I've always seen is, I think Elon Musk is not always the first person to think of something, but he certainly has a way of getting it out in front of the media, doesn't he?
Right. He's like, hey, wait a minute. That gives me an idea, and I've got the money to do it.
He has mastered that skill.
Oh, definitely, because a good friend of mine that I went to college with has a tube technology called ET3, and he's been trying to push that for years, and he gets really kind of frustrated because all Elon Musk needs to do is kind of like go out there and go, well, I'm thinking, you know, maybe, and
yep.
And here's somebody who's, you know, an engineer, been pushing this technology, trying to get backers for years and years, and all Elon Musk needs to do is go, well, you know, we're kind of thinking about, and then the world latches onto his idea. But anyway, how many microsats are you talking about there, Dave?
For Elon, he wants to do 4,000, and then OneWeb is saying they want to do about 700.
And they want to cover the whole globe, right?
Yeah, I mean, 4,000, that's almost like space junk, isn't it?
Well, now I started thinking that. That's what I was thinking. Seems like a lot.
And how long will they stay up there before they burn up? And that's another batch up.
I think it just depends on the satellite, but I think, don't quote me on this, I think I saw somewhere about 7 years.
That's longer than I thought they should.
To see if... Yeah,
wow.
Just to...
Okay, well, Dave, if you can give us some more information maybe in the future of these launches of debris into space, hopefully this debris helps spread the Internet around the world. But, hey,
yeah,
really fascinating about this project for the geo-mapping. You know, I can probably contribute something for California. I don't think we need a satellite to talk about drought spread in California, but... You know, when you were talking about how this data might be shared, is there any public information about them maybe providing this data through internet for people who are interested in tracking?
Yeah, I think it is all publicly available, but like a lot of that free data, it's just the data, and a lot of times it doesn't include the proprietary software they paid, you know, a lot of money for to decipher the information to see it on the screen.
Understood.
I can't confirm that, but I would imagine that's probably how it is. Until
okay.
You get the reports that, you know, they compile to, you know, then it would probably be in that. But I think the raw data, you'd have to figure out some way to compute it.
Right. Okay. Well, very good. So let's kind of move into the next part of the show, and I'm going to go ahead and put the telephone number out there for our listeners.
Phone lines are now open for Satellite Nation. Call us at 877-SAT-GUYS or 877-728-4897.
So if you're listening this evening and you want to join in on the conversation about the future of C-band, it is under attack. Tell us more, Dave.
All right, so I've done quite a bit of research on this, and in my view, what seems to be happening is mostly led and by big lobbying groups like the GSMA that has 230 mobile operators in 220 countries as members and 3.2 billion individual subscribers, is lobbying basically to the ITU then to get it on an agenda at what's called the WRC, which is the World Radio Communication Conference, which happens, I think, every 3 to 4 years. And
right, and this year it's happening, November 2nd through 27th of this year, right?
Yes, sir. Yep. And so basically the item that I think we're most interested in is a resolution from the WRC 12, which was happened in 2012, which is 233. And basically what that says is investigate and reallocate C-band for mobile primary usage. And that is pretty much the gist of it. And it's kind of scary. You know, I was researching a lot, and I was like, no way. And then they start looking at it more and more. And then you actually go and you look at the agenda for WRC 15, and the first one on there after all the housekeeping stuff is 1.1, which is to consider additional spectrum allocations to mobile service on a primary basis, which is the 233 resolution. So it's
now, of course, the primary argument that I'm seeing against people who, you know, are saying, hey, you know, wait a minute. So it's use what you already have before you get more. It's kind of like, you know, when you're a kid, you know, digging into the pie as it's passed by, and you already have a pile of food on your plate. Mom would say, wait a minute, you got to eat that food that you already have before you get the pie. How do you weigh in on this? Does mobile terrestrial have enough spectrum? I mean, they are looking for usage for the next 4 to 5 years. How is that going to play into this?
I think what they're going after is the fact that the C-band is continuous, and that's the you know, the best of the best, where they can get big blocks and 40 and 80 megahertz with channels. And so if you look at it that way, C-band looks real attractive.
Definitely. Here's these big video services taking up mass amounts of spectrum, and why not? These broadcasters can use other mediums to get it out. You know, some of the more ridiculous things that I'm reading, coming from a satellite background, is we know the effect of having other services in the same spectrum. I mean, if we can look at historical, as many people might know, the C-band spectrum is already under attack, and it's been under attack for a while, and that's the usage of wide area Wi-Fi, or WiMAX, using the spectrum below 3.7 gigahertz. So here in the U.S., our C-band, FSS band, is used primarily between 3.7 gig and 4.2, well, and above. But the spectrum that's being used for WiMAX and wide area Wi-Fi ends at what, 3.65 gigahertz, I think it is?
Yeah, it's real close. Mm-hmm.
And so when we look at that...
If anybody wants to look it up...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, if anybody wants to look it up on the FCC, the license for that is NN. And you can look at all the details that way.
So now, this wide area Wi-Fi... we know that it's having some major impact because, around the world right now, broadcasters, downlinkers are scrambling for solutions because of the rollout of 4G, which has some spectrum just adjacent, going as high as 3.65, I believe it is, or, definitely ending right below 3.7. And so, some of us are selling a lot of equipment to address the interference by WiMAX and Wi-Fi. So this is for interference outside of the spectrum, but it is getting in and interfering with satellite downlinks already. So now what they're proposing is allowing ground terrestrial usage, or we could just say mobile or terrestrial usage, of the exact frequencies that are used for satellite downlink. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep. And I couldn't really imagine what that would cause kind of havoc. Just today the CEO of Intelsat came out and issued a deal that said if this happens, it says, quote, opening the C-band to mobile operators would mean the end of C-band service. There would be no guarantees, and he says it's a lose-lose scenario.
You know, and I have
to... He does have a lot of money invested in... You know,
I think that's a doomsday prediction, but I definitely see where, trying to utilize C-band near any urban center, and to think that the mobile usage of those possible interfering frequencies would end at the end of suburbia and wouldn't get into remote areas. You know, there. I think the mobile industry is saying, "Hey, we only want to use the spectrum in urban. You know, we all these big dishes can go out into the rural areas, and we won't interfere out there." But do you think that's going to be the case?
Nope.
Well,
no, I mean, if you look at the WiMAX that we have right now, most of those installations are mostly, you know, point to point or point to multi point. With very few towers out there, and each has to be accepted by the FCC, you know, to get a license. And I mean, if they start pumping out, you know, in our 3.7 to 4.2 from every cell phone tower, I mean, the amount of interference that's going to cause is just going to be a lot higher than, you know, the WiMAX, because that WiMAX band really isn't used all that much, because it's not all that big and there's a lot of restrictions with it.
And, you know, something to consider is by the time the signal gets down from the satellite into your, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12-foot dish, it is extremely weak as compared to the strength of the signal that's coming across from a local terrestrial source. So, you know, and it really goes the other way as well. You know, the uplink frequencies, so these, uplinkers, they are going to interfere with mobile operation anywhere that an uplink is occurring. Hey, I noticed that we do have a caller right now from area code 260. Area code 260, go ahead. What do you have to weigh in on the C-band transition?
Hey, guys. It's Dan again.
Hello, Dan.
Is it the same thing as with 4G, what they keep talking about on TV, or is that a different frequency? When they're AT&T and Verizon are talking about that, is that going on along the same lines as interfering?
Well, 4G, 4G is the technology, but not necessarily the same band right now. International, they want to use 4G in the bands, and we're seeing that the rollout of WiMAX and 4G in other countries, they are rolling that technology out in adjacent frequencies, and it is causing interference with C-band downlinks.
Okay.
Not even yet, but
I called in because the radio show on the Access America quit working, and for about 5 minutes, and I called in to listen to you guys, so it just went completely out. So, and it came back. So, what was I going to say? But when is it supposed to be? And when are they supposed to start working on trying to get rid of C-band?
Right now?
I thought it was like, I didn't know what was,
It's a big process to do this. And so right now, you know, everybody's doing their lobbying to get what they want to get on the particular part of that agenda at the WRC in November, and then that's when all the shenanigans goes down is in November.
Did you say something, Davey, about the about Intelsat? And when I called in, I caught like the tail end of that. Were you saying something about the satellite company, like Intelsat and SES are going to...
I just said that the CEO came out today and just said the doomsday prediction.
Right, and there's a lot of good supporting material. So if you head over to Satellite Guys and look at the thread that that Dave started over there about Save C-Band. Dave, what part of the forum is that thread in?
It's in under the C-band discussion thread, and it's a sticky right up at the top, and it is a lot of reading because it's kind of old real quick, to be honest with you.
Right. So, you know, some of these documents are, 100 pages long, some of them, but there is a lot of really good information in there. So, in fact, one of those is by an uplinker who is talking about that. So if you want to find out more about the different stands that pro and con, is discussing on this, Dave, you've put together a really good selection of articles that really present both sides of what people are proposing to do with the spectrum.
Okay.
Hey, go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's okay. What were you going to say, Davey?
Oh, I was just going to say, let me read something to you guys and see if you guys agree or disagree. So this is from a report from someone that wants this to happen, and they say, to quote, "The rain fade for KU and KA bands can be overcome with today's modern satellite technology, such as spot beams, adaptive coding, and modulation and uplink power controls."
And so, I read that, too. I mean, get real.
So you guys are with me. That sounds like a bunch of BS, right?
I'm sure that things are better than they used to, and it's really great that you can crank up the power and crank down the FEC, you know, under certain conditions. But, I mean, yeah, a two tin cans and a string is going to be more effective at communicating across the room than a satellite signal as well when you're inside a building.
So your all's KU still goes out when it rains then real hard, I guess, just like mine.
Well, I mean, I think we all can agree that KU is considerably better, you know, with the better FECs and the adaptive FEC ratios. But, you know, when they're saying that the rain fade for KU and KA can be overcome, my goodness, some of the raindrops in the tropical regions are larger than a KA wavelength. How are you going to overcome that one?
Exactly. You're not.
Oh, with spot beams.
Yeah, but be careful. Don't walk through the spot beam. Your hot dog might get roasted.
That's a hot spot beam. You can actually see it.
Now, what I found was interesting, I think in that same mobile proposal, was they were proposing, well, you know, an easy way to clear the spectrum is just move all the existing satellite services up to higher bands like KU and KA. That's going to solve everything. Okay. Can you imagine the economic impact, you know, compare that to like one of the satellite groups who says, you know, things like the satellite-based telecommunications for remote areas, distance learning, disaster recovery, all of these can be impacted by this moving away from some frequencies that are virtually rain-resistant to something that is known to be affected by rain fade.
That ain't gonna work. They're gonna send some money up into space to all these satellites and put new repeaters in the C-band side. I'll just let them all go.
Well, I don't think they're proposing that, but you know, they're just saying, hey, it's going to be easy enough to move these broadcasters off of C-band and KU, KA band. It's going to work great for distribution. Part of me says, well, why don't you go use KU and KA for your terrestrial services?
That's what they need to do then. It's so easy to use. And it's there, nobody's using, go use that part.
Now, if I remember, Dish Network or Dish Indirect lost a case at the FCC where somebody actually petitioned and got them to allow to use the lower part of the DBS terrestrial, and I'm trying to remember what band that was, what they called it, but then Dish Network ended up buying it all back in their settlement with Cablevision, because Cablevision owned a lot of it, and they were trying that terrestrial down in Florida, like a 50 meg down internet package. You know, it never took off. That's, I think, the big concern is, you know, they'll do all this stuff and they might allow some, we might lose exclusivity in this range, and then, you know, there might be some, you know, not much interest, and some less than qualified manufacturers maybe making equipment and submitting false reports to get, you know, government approval. And that's what I'm scared of, is just rogue transmitters out there.
Of course, none of us would ever or have ever been known to operate any rogue transmitters in our lives. So. Well, what I found was kind of not following the rules of the society. You know, one thing that I did find interesting is that it almost seems like the satellite industry is almost the voice of reason on some of this. You know, they're talking about the significant cost and the adaptation of these frequencies. So if there was a transitionary period to use these frequencies for terrestrial, they're saying, hey, you know, we're talking about, we have an investment floating in space that has a life cycle of, you know, 15 or 18 years. Now, so the plans to clear these frequencies have to take that into consideration.
That's true.
Now, hopefully, if this does pass and it's not in our favor, that does happen, and there is a 15-year, you know, transition period, then that would probably be doable, you know. But if it's right away, then I think we're going to run into trouble. But, you know, you never know when you get all these lawyers in there what exactly might transpire, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we can speak from experience, because I know FTAers down in Australia, New Zealand, right now, Philippines is going under a big WiMAX, wide area Wi-Fi rollout. And, you know, these areas, there is no doubt, these aren't even the same frequencies that they're using. These people are losing frequencies that, you know, these reports say, oh, it shouldn't have any effect. But in reality, these services are wiping out, satellite signals coming down to actual users. This isn't, some controlled, experiment. This is, we turned on a transmitter. Let's see how many people lose their C band.
Yeah. They might just do that.
So if you're listening this evening and you have any comments about, hey, should we turn over C band frequencies to terrestrial use? What's your feelings on this? Give us a call.
Phone lines are now open for Satellite Nation. Call us at 877-SAT-GUYS or 877-728-4897.
So if you have...
347-319.
That's 347-327-9319. Yes. All right. Well, so... As we look at this, should we just rely on a lobbying group like the broadcasters in NAB or somebody else to get out there and speak for us? What can we do to actually make our voice as hobbyists heard? Should we be heard?
Hell yeah, we should be heard.
We shouldn't take this sitting down a lot.
Yeah, I would think putting stuff into the public record at the WRC is the way to do it, just like you do, how the FCC does their, stuff. You submit, your information and get it in there.
So instead of sitting around and wondering if C-band's going to be around for you to enjoy, 5 years from now, do you have any links where listeners can go to and make their opinions part of the public record?
Well, I think what we should do is have people join and post at the Satellite Guys thread that's sticky, and get some posts going with some good quality information and come up with some kind of number graphs and all this jazz, and then put it into a nice little presentation and send it on off.
So this isn't the Chicken Little, the sky is falling. We don't really want to just talk about lamenting what we're going to lose. This really needs to be some constructive conversation about what are the realities, what do we enjoy, what do we watch, what will we lose.
All right.
Absolutely. To know
so
that there will be
over
some harmful consequences for us if they do what these other people want. And, you know, if we don't voice our opinion in a report, they won't know that.
Yeah.
Right. So head on over to Satellite Guys, to the C-Band Satellite Discussion Forum, and there's a thread in there called Save Our C-Band. And it's really important to weigh in. If this is something that you really enjoy, this is your hobby, this is your passion, this is something that seriously is threatened, and there's no doubt in my mind, based on what we're seeing happening internationally, when these 4G services are rolled out even out of band, when these are competing signals that may be in the exact same band as what we want to watch, it's going to get washed out. There's no doubt in my mind.
No. And we
so,
still
hey, Brian, for these... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
So for these people that having this problem overseas right now, and I know, you know, you make a great product, C-band, LMBF, PLL, that has a filter in it to help combat that. In some scenarios, have you heard people say even that? It works, but they're still having to put like shielding around the dish to knock to block stuff out, or what are people doing to combat it right now?
Well, you know, some of the realities of the interference is it's not always directional. A lot of this WiMAX is just an omnidirectional antenna getting services out to multiple subscribers. So this isn't a point-to-point service in most of these. And so signals can be coming not just from one direction, but it can actually be a mesh, a complete system blanketing an area. So it isn't simple like the old days where if you had C-band interference from a local telephone company, you could throw up some chicken wire on one side. That's just not going to work. The realities of what's happening right now, for example, in the Philippines, I've had some long discussions with some broadcasters over there. We're talking about interference within the low band that they actually use in the country. And so when they are talking about trying to get rid of specific interference, it's very difficult to do because a lot of these frequencies are very wide-ranging frequencies. It isn't just a particular frequency that's interfering outside of the band that you want to receive. So, for example, the C1 PLL by Titanium Satellite, it basically attenuates everything below 3.6. It's basically wiped out, but it's soft roll-off below 3.7. Well, right now, that's working great if they are targeting receiving transponders or frequencies that are above 3.7. But
yeah.
Imagine if they are trying to receive a frequency that is in low-band C-band, which is in use in Southeast Asia, 3.4 to 3.7 gig. Well, those people have to invest in an extremely expensive technology, which is a mechanical filter that goes in line between the feed horn and the LMB. Trouble is, those frequencies are in transition. You may buy a $500,000, $600,000 filter for a particular frequency, but then next week, when are they going to roll out a new frequency?
Exactly.
This is going to be never-ending for them.
That sure ain't. They sell those things for all kinds of, you know, frequencies, even amateur radio band. And those mechanical filters ain't cheap. They're good, you know, block out what you're trying to do, but they ain't cheap, that's for sure.
No, they target a specific frequency for attenuation. And so if you go out and you buy a filter to say, I'm going to notch out this interfering carrier, but then, you know, a couple weeks later, they expand their terrestrial into that area that's been granted for them to use. suddenly you have a filter that's addressing one frequency, but maybe two or three more have just popped up. It really is, you know, utilizing the exact same frequencies for conflicting channels or usage.
Yeah. Right. Ain't doing no good to buy one. Those things ain't very variable. You can't just, well, I'll just turn a knob on it. Those things are constructed for a certain thing and a certain frequency. I mean, you know, and if you, they, like you said, they move and decide, well, let's just change this. We ain't decided exactly how we're going to do it. So we're going to move, change frequency over here a little bit and use this frequency. Then those people just wasted their money.
There's a really good article on how to deal with this interference in this month's issue of Teleaudiovisual Magazine. So that is provided to us free for reading. So if you go to teleaudiovisio.com and take a look at issue 1501, there's a great article in there about how to deal with filtering out this WiMAX and Wi-Fi. But, of course, we're talking about WiMAX and Wi-Fi that is below, not the same frequencies, but below the high band. So, you know, once if terrestrial users are given the ability to use the same spectrum that we're using for receiving satellite signals, this isn't a doomsday thing. This is going to happen. We are going to lose the ability to receive satellite signals because you just have competing high power local terrestrial signals on the exact same frequencies.
Yep, that's the problem with it. They're going to be running, pumping out a lot more power than what you're going to be receiving from that satellite 22,000 miles away.
And the only way to combat it, if you want to be perfect, is you have to be higher than the signal, so you have to have your dish 300 foot in the air.
And then also, you had mentioned last week about just the size of the satellite dish. You know, that is going to become a very big factor. It is going to have to be a very large dish to pinpoint focus on the satellite to even have a chance of bringing your signal-to-noise ratio even up to a level of being able to receive it in the first place, let alone, you know, combating the terrestrial interference.
I have to get a 20-meter dish to find a place to put that sucker.
I hear somebody is going to be making a mesh 20-meter dish in the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
joking. Sorry, guys.
I wouldn't be able to afford it if they did.
Yeah, that would probably be an expensive dish.
Be very expensive. Just the structure to hold it up.
Well, guys, you know, I think it's just very important that people get, if this is a hobby that you value, something you're really interested in, we can't just rely on a lobbying group or somebody else to act in our best interest. You have to understand the European Union has never really used C-band for satellite usage to any considerable amount. And so here you have the European Union going, hey, yeah, give it away now. And, you know,
literally.
Yeah, they don't care. They say, hey, yeah, give it to mobile. That's going to be much better use. But signals don't stop at the border.
Nope.
So, guys, what are your thoughts? Where, suggestions? Is there something that, we should do as hobbyists that, you know, we are, you know, we're essentially a squeaky wheel. I don't think people out there really think that much about the hobbyists. They're thinking about the corporations who depend on point A to point B delivery. So what do you think of something that we should concentrate on for hobbyists when we start these discussions?
Go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say we just need to get everybody together and get on the same page. And, like you said, Brian, everybody, you know, this, I don't know, the Chicken Little thing, this is going to happen. If we don't sit back and, sit back and watch and say, ah, oh, they ain't going to get rid of it. They'll be all right. Well, in a few years, it's going to disappear, and it will go away. Because they're out for, you know, they don't think about this, and they don't care about it. They're, you know, they're a business, and they're in a business to make money. And they want money. They don't care about the hobbyists, you know, and most of them probably ain't into this hobby, so they don't care. They just want that money. So we've got to get really pull together and get a lot of voices, and, you know, and then we got to, you know, discuss, you know, I don't know where the next step is to him. Is do we, maybe Brian, you know, or Dave knows where to go with this. Do we go to the union with it, or do we, you know, where do we go from there if we do get a big collection of data?
And Dave, before you comment there, what do you think the role of the ARRL might be in this? I mean, it is a hobbyist group. It would impact frequencies that are given to amateurs for usage. Do you think this is something of interest to them as well?
It might be, and I think it was. I have to look at the last QST and see. QST's a magazine, but see if they said something about it. But a lot of stuff up that happened frequency is not used that much, even though, you know, you want to save everything. You want everything to be mined. But, and we already lost some frequencies over the past, you know, 20 years, where the ones that just not used that much, so we lose it, you know, because it might be just a handful of people, because you can't go out and buy commercial gear that transmits and receives those high frequencies. So and it's got to be, you know, pretty much point-to-point and all that. So most people, you know, these days they don't have the knowledge like they used to, you know, even if you do have knowledge to build that stuff's got to be precise and, you know, perfect. You ain't like building something, you know, for AM broadcast band. Everything's
right,
got to be so precise.
Do amateur radio operators have something to lose by losing this spectrum from, 3.4 all the way through 4.8 gig? So, you know, that might be something, because, you know, there's a very organized group and a very dedicated group of hobbyists involved with amateur radio that, you know, that could be mobilized for this as well. So, Dave, what is your thoughts on this?
Actually, that's a fantastic idea, Brian, actually, too, because they've fought this a lot. That would be a great avenue to approach to see if they could help get some documentation drawn up. Yeah, I just think that we need to come up with some kind of documentation on what the consequences will be for us from an amateur radio perspective and get our voice heard. I mean, I think that's probably about all we can do, really.
Well, you know, it's one of those things, you just don't know what you lost until you lost it. You know, a lot of cowboy songs have been written about that one. So, you know, I think we have some great friends out there. You know, Ken Wright's over at the Spectrum Monitor. I think, you know, we can talk about that. I think in next week we're going to have a guest on again talking about SDR radio. We're going to have Mario Felipe on again to talk about some more advanced uses of SDR. And so here's some examples of guys that probably are very well situated in the in, you know, the communications and the promotions of you know, information within the amateur radio groups. And so I think we should reach out and see what their interests are and what their concerns are for losing the spectrum as well.
Yeah, very good idea. And, you know, if we can somehow get in contact with the ARRL, or see, first of all, you know, I need to research, see what they're already doing, and get help them, you know, to help us get involved with it. Because I don't know if anybody remembers, but about 20 years ago, I guess it was, or 15 years ago or something, they was pushing for broadband over power lines, if you remember that. And they did a big jump on that to knock that out, because if you got, you know, it's just going to wipe out frequencies everywhere, not just for amateur radio operators, but a lot of services. You can have a lot of trash and noise from these, just, you know, these high-tension lines just sitting there, you know, in the air just radiating, you know, the extra crap.
Well, basically, wouldn't have that just turned every power line in North America into an antenna for transmitting?
Pretty much, yeah. That's the thing, you know, and it's, that was the problem. It sounded good on paper because, hey, you've got power to your house, you can have high-speed internet, you know, don't worry about all this other stuff. But then they crushed all that. And then, of course, fiber came along, and they quit worrying about it. But it still would be nice, you know, people, you know, it's out in rural areas, everybody can have high-speed internet. But it's just too much problems with it, way too many, you know, it's a big antenna, like you said, exactly right.
Well, this evening we're talking about the World Radio Communications Conference is happening November 2nd through 27th, 2015, and they are considering a revision of the use of the radio spectrum. Of most interest to us and what we're talking about this evening is the shared usage of the frequencies that we refer to as C-band for the big, ugly dishes, BUDs, the bugs in our backyards. Well, a lot of those, that's the way that the signals are distributed around the country into cable head ends. And those are that's where the best English programming is for satellite viewing in North America. So what we stand to lose here is, you know, there's all these promises. We've heard these promises before. Oh, it won't interfere. But in all reality, we are already seeing what interference is happening, even when frequencies outside but close to are doing to our reception. So this evening we're just talking about the National Radio Communications Conference, and they are the ones that regulate the international treaties for frequency and spectrum use. So, David, if you want to put a big bow on this evening and just kind of you have about 45 seconds to get people fired up and to come on over.
Well, I'm just, you heard us talk about it. It's going to probably happen, and we just got to get in there. We got to, if you're passionate about it like I am and Michael and Brian are, you know, come over and help us read the stuff, maybe go out and search some stuff. Tell some people, you know, put some people together. Let's get a report, and let's get it submitted and get our voice heard for our hobby. Otherwise, we're not going to be really having a hobby for C-band.
Exactly. Hey, thanks. This evening, joining us this evening has been Dave Wally Heights from GotCBand.com. And next week, who do we have as our guest there, Michael?
Mario Flippy. He'll be joining us back again to go with some advanced SDR stuff and some more about it. It's going to be a good show.
Great. Well, everybody, thanks for listening to Satellite Nation. Remember to come over to Facebook, sign up for a free T-shirt. Talk to you later.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks to all that tuned in tonight. Join Satellite Guys Michael and Brian next Wednesday for another informative episode of Satellite Nation. And don't forget to like our page at facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. Until next week, good night. So this is goodbye.